Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, July 27th, 2014. This is episode 1104. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Lantronics, makers of the X-Print server. Print from any Android phone, tablet, Chromebook, or Kindle Fire to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and enter the code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple or Android device is worth at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, digital photography, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. Love to talk high tech with you. Anything high tech. That's what we talk about on the show today. Website techguylabs.com. Keep that in mind. Anytime I mention a link or anything I say, it's going to appear on the site techguylabs.com. And what we do is we divide that page. You know, if you go there, you can go by day, by show, by hour, by question. So it's very easy to find a particular question, hour three, question four, whatever that is. And you can actually, it takes us a couple of days. We won't have it until Monday or Tuesday. But by Monday or Tuesday, we'll have the audio and the video up from the show and all of that. TechGuyLabs.com. Do we know who sent me this painting? Do you have his name? It might have been in the box. I kind of tore the box out. This is nice. This is a fairly large oil painting of me.
There's a painting behind you?
Either that or somebody's looking over my shoulder.
I thought someone put acid in my latte. And I don't mean the kind in a lab.
Yeah, wow. I like it. Lisa's already said, can we take it home? Yes, let's put it over the mantle.
Okay. Maybe over the toilet.
No, I wouldn't put it there. I don't know. It's interesting.
I do like it.
Art isn't. It's good. It's a good likeness of me.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's what's weird because I have it next to me, and when you see the two together, it's
which
acrylic, not oil. Thank you. Burke apparently knows the difference. It is an acrylic. Does that mean we can peel it and put it on the car? I don't know what that means. It's acrylic is the modern form of oil painting. Did you know, I want the word to go out on this, that it is okay to zipper merge? Did you know that? Now, this isn't strictly technology, although it is in a way, because traffic flow and how it works, that's a very high-tech science that takes computers and it's big data and you got to solve it. Apparently, the Washington State Department of Transportation and the Minnesota State Department of Transportation have made it legal to do the one thing that everybody thinks is rude. You know, when you come, there's the highway narrows to one lane, and everybody says, "Oh, the polite thing to do is to get in the lane that it's going to be, even though that's the slow lane." And there's a lane to the right that's got lots, that's room, and then if somebody takes that lane to the right and goes zipping along and then merges at the last minute, that's considered rude, right? Yeah, no. In fact, in Washington State and Minnesota, they've made a law that that's what you should do, and they're encouraging people. They're putting up signs saying, if they call it a zipper merge, because it is a late merge, but turns out it increases the capacity because both lanes are full. The key is that the people in the lane being merged into need to be polite and let one car in front of them, then they go. One car in front, then they go. One car. It's like a zipper. And if everybody does that, they said the politest thing to do is to get an assist. Sometimes you score the point. Sometimes you get the assist. So as a public service, as a public service, I want everyone to know it's okay to zipper merge. They've even made a video, a YouTube video, about zipper merging. Early merge, drivers move out of the closed lane as early as possible. Bad. Zipper merge, drivers fill both lanes and then merge at the last minute. A zipper merge is good. See, I'm a rule follower, right? When I drive, I go the speed limit. I do all that. So I get in the lane that's slow, and I drive, and then I shake my fist. You're cheating at the people in the right going zzz, and then merging at the last possible moment. Turns out they're right. Hard to admit it. What do you do? Are you a rule follower in your hot rod little BMW zipping down?
Well, I might exceed the speed limit from time to time, but otherwise I'm extremely gracious because, yeah, I get what you're saying.
It increases capacity, I guess.
Exactly.
Because both lanes are now full, but it does require everybody cooperate.
That's what traffic is cooperation. It's not a me versus you thing. It's an us. And the better we all treat this thing, the
you're
better
a hippie,
we all
aren't you?
Get along. No, because you know I know.
No, it's true.
I have some traffic reporting experience.
You know, you're a former traffic reporter. You still do it.
Yeah,
from
and
time
I
to
always
time.
Read articles and watch videos like that because I think it's insanely
it's
interesting how one tap of the brakes can affect an entire stretch of freeway for a little bit.
That's the other thing that that the traffic scientists say.
Yeah.
Is you want to not have to hit the brakes, so you want to maintain like an
safe
accordion
distance,
and then if the traffic in front of you slows, you slow, but without hitting the brakes. Because as soon as you hit the brakes, you could see it happen. It's like peristalsis. The whole highway just goes, hey, and freezes up.
Right, because the people way back
they see the brake
red lights, and they don't know how abruptly you may have slowed or not.
Fascinating stuff. Anyway, just a little. Sometimes I do public service announcements. That's a public service announcement. Hey, here's one from the Cable Companies of America. Net neutrality, because we're talking about this, because the FCC, in fact, they just closed their period of comment, got more than 1 million comments. That's the most comments the FCC have ever received on anything except for Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction during the Super Bowl. That got more comments. A million plus comments in the comment period. And the issue is whether the FCC should allow cable companies to charge companies like Netflix extra to reach us. Whether there should be fast lanes or if all internet traffic should be treated equally. Now the cable companies say that's not the issue. They say in a filing with the FCC, Time Warner, which is a cable company about to merge with Comcast, right, claimed the controversy over internet providers charging websites for access to fast lanes is a red herring. Here's the real danger. The real danger is that Google or Netflix could demand payments from them. That Time Warner says customers expect access to the most popular websites. And if Google said, hey, Time Warner, if you want to get to Google, if you want customers to have access to Google, you got to give us money. Well, you know what? Good news, Time Warner. Net neutrality protects you both in that case. So here's the good news. Pass the fast lane stuff because it'll protect you on the other side too. The National Cable and Telecommunications Association, which is a lobbying group for the cable companies. And by the way, the chairman of the FCC, former president. So, they know each other. They wrote, a relatively concentrated group of large web companies, such as Google, Netflix, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, and Facebook, have enormous and growing power over consumers' ability to access the content of their choice on the internet. It makes no sense to focus on us and ignore them. Well, here's the good news. Net neutrality protects you all. That doesn't, they don't want any laws against, It protects you both. The chairman, CEO of founder of Netflix, Reed Hastings, said, I think the internet really has this different, much more open architecture than classic cable. And the cable companies can't get out of that mindset, Cable companies get charged right now for HBO, right? If they want to carry HBO, they have to pay money to HBO. And they're afraid, just as they would like to charge you extra for access to HBO, they're afraid that HBO, they don't want this model. They kind of want half the model. They want to charge you extra for access to YouTube, but they don't want YouTube to ask them for some of that money. I guess why it's obvious. Everybody's going to act in their own interest, whether it's merging on lanes or you're a cable company. I guess we should just assume that, right? Everybody's just going to be selfish and act in their own interest, and there you have it. I find that depressing. 888-88-ASK-LEO. Let's be team players, just like Heather. 888-827-5536. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you, where's my Lantronics? Here it is right here. Oh, man, this is a good thing. Everybody ought to have an XPrint server, don't you know? Do you have, many of us do, USB printers, right? Because in the old days, you had one computer in the house, and you would just hook that computer up to the USB printer. But nowadays, you might have many devices in the house, your phone, your tablet, your computer, maybe a laptop or two, and you want all of them to print. Well, wouldn't it be cool if you could attach something to your USB printer that would make it a Wi-Fi capable printer so that anywhere it could print, it could sit anywhere, and you could print to it from anything? That's what this does. This is the Lantronics XPrint server. Better than that, this is the Google Cloud Print version. So it does all that. Plus, it means you can print to it from anything. Even if you're on the road or you're at work, you can print to your home printer using Google Cloud Print. And the best thing about these, they're very easy to set up. There's no configuration, no software on anything. You just plug it into the printer, attach it to the Wi-Fi, and you're done. And now you can wirelessly print from anything, including Chromebooks, Android phones and tablets, the Kindle Fire. It works with almost every USB printer out there, whether it's wired, wireless, USB, network, it works. More than 4,000 top printers. And it's so easy. Automatic discovery and setup. You can get on this one device up to 10 printers, network printers, and 8 USB printers all at the same time. A lot of schools and businesses use these because all their printers are suddenly networked and attached and working with Cloud Print. $149.95. We've got a deal for you. Free shipping on your order if you go to xprintserver.com/twit. And use the offer code TWIT at checkout. What a cool idea. This is the easiest thing I've ever used. There are other ways to do this that are really complicated and crazy. Just get an XPrint server. XPrintServer.com/twit. Use the offer code TWIT for free shipping. It's from Lantronics, and it's good. It's a good thing. Leo LaFleur. I tried to do the thing, you know, the pop that they do. But
beautifully done.
Oh, really? Okay. Maybe I someday could be a hotel concierge. Yes. Who's next on the phone?
We've got Pete in Lomita. Thank you. Helping people send their money.
Heather Hammond, mm-hmm. Phone Ranger. Hello, Pete in Lomita. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hello.
Hi. Just want to let you know I have a Movado watch with a sapphire crystal, like the new Apple phones will have, and they will scratch.
Oh, that's depressing.
But they will scratch.
Yeah. No, there's, you know what? So here's it's a fascinating thing. It's materials science. You can have something that is scratch resistant, but it'll be soft. It'll be hard, which means it'll be brittle, which means it can shatter. Or you can have something that doesn't shatter. It's not brittle, but it'll easily scratch. And it's hard to get the both properties. And that's what Gorilla Glass. And people are saying Gorilla Glass 3, which is the latest from Corning, is comparable to sapphire.
Ah.
We'll see. It doesn't scratch easily, though, and that's the point. It's much less scratchable than, say, glass or plastic,
exactly.
Which is terrible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So here's my problem. I'm 58 years old. I've never owned a computer, but I'm going to have to get something. It just, you can't live now without having something. So I'm thinking tablets.
Yes.
But I have one problem. My vision is starting to fail. So if I read a book, I have to use a magnifying glass. Are tablets available that you can make the print?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. In fact, better than, you know, big print is one of the reasons people like electronic readers, because you could set the print size for whatever you want. And having really big print, my mom, same thing, has difficulty. She's in her 80s, has difficulty with smaller print. She'd anybody over 40 is going to have to wear readers. I always make the print bigger than the default because it's easy. It's easy on the eyes. I can read it. And that's something that any electronic device will do.
Okay.
So that's the good news.
Okay. I was torn between a Galaxy. They have a 12-inch one now that I was either that or...
I think 12 is a little big. You may like it, you know, for you, especially because you want things to be bigger. Generally, though, what that happens when they make it bigger is that the icons, the text isn't getting bigger. It's just more real estate.
Oh, okay. But you can make the icons bigger?
You can make the text bigger. Apple's better on this than Android, but you can make the text bigger. More to the point, if you use Kindle, the Kindle reader, or are you going to read books on there?
I am going to read books, but...
The Kindle reader lets you set the font size in the reader to anything you want.
Okay.
They also let you change it from black text on white, which is what paper does, obviously, to white text on black, which for some is easier. It's a higher contrast, and sometimes people with vision problems like that better. They also have a sepia background that is more easy on the eyes. This is the whole point of an electronic reader. A book is a book. So you have to use a magnifying glass or something external, or maybe buy big print books, which, you know, those are sometimes too, those are ridiculously big.
Right.
This is nice.
My vision isn't that bad yet. So
yeah.
Should I wait for the new iPad?
Well, there'll be one, we think, we don't know, in October, but it's hard to imagine it being much better than the existing iPad.
Oh, okay.
There'll be things like maybe they'll have a fingerprint reader on it, maybe they'll use Sapphire, I don't know. I think the current iPad is a very good choice, and I think a better choice than Android for most people.
Oh, what was that again?
A better choice than Android tablets for most people.
Okay.
Because this is your first computer. And by the way, congratulations, because so many people say, oh, I'm going to get a computer. I need a computer. What does everybody get? Everybody gets Windows, and they regret it because it's so complicated. You'll hear on the show every single episode somebody calls in, and it's just so complicated, and it's much more than you need. You're right to think tablet.
Okay. And any chance that the new Apple tablet would be bigger than the one they have now?
There are rumors, unfounded so far, because Apple doesn't leak this stuff, that there will be a iPad Pro that will be bigger.
Oh, good. Oh, okay. So I should maybe wait.
If you can, you might want to wait, yeah.
Hey, I waited 58 years. What's another...
Well, I figure the sooner you start, the sooner you're going to... I'm telling you, you're going to call me in 6 months and say, why didn't you say get it now? Why wait? Because this has changed my life. I'm emailing. I can surf the net. I don't know how people live without some form of web browsing these days. If I want to buy a product, if I want to look up a plumber, I go online. That's really where you can get the information right away.
Now, is there a... because I'm pretty good at following directions. Is there a book like iPads for Dummies?
There is. But the beauty of the iPad is it's surprisingly straightforward.
Oh, okay.
There are books, iPad for Dummies, in fact. There are books like that. I think you might not really need it. Try it. It does not come with any instructions. You just, the whole, Apple's whole thing is you already know how to use it. It's easy. It's intuitive. And I'll tell you, when you see a three-year-old sit down and within minutes figure out how to use it, figure out how to launch Netflix and get SpongeBob on it's pretty impressive.
Okay.
So if a three-year-old, I think you can use it.
Okay, great. Thank you, Leo.
Hey, yeah, I think you're going to enjoy it. Let me know. And yeah, if you really want to get the latest and greatest, you could wait if they announce it in October. But that is 3 months off. And we don't know. There's no guarantee. This is a mature product. Apple has now... Same thing with the iPhone. It's hard for them to add anything significantly better. Bigger screen, maybe. On the iPhone, definitely. Fingerprint reader, they have them on the iPhone. Would be nice to have it on the iPad. Not necessary, but what they're going to start doing, I think, right now the fingerprint reader is merely used to unlock the phone. But I think that Apple has announced that in the next version of iOS, its operating system, they want to give third-party developers access to that fingerprint reader, which means perhaps... In 6 months or a year, your bank will use a fingerprint reader to, you know, you'll still probably have to enter a password, but then it'll say, okay, now let me see your fingerprint for extra security. These kinds of things are great. Maybe it'll be a little faster. I think it probably will be faster. That's one thing Apple's been pretty consistent. But the current iPad, the iPad Air, is pretty darn fast. One thing you might just find you like is gaming. I know we often think, well, games are for kids, but there are intellectually challenging games, fun games, even crossword puzzles and Scrabble on the iPad that are great. And a lot of the people I see using iPads use it for entertainment, not just email, not just, you know, a few productivity things, email and the web. If I look at what's on my iPad, it's got exercise programs on it. It's got games on it. I play chess on it with people all around the world. I look at my photographs. I tweet. I use Facebook. There's so much you can do with it. I read magazines. I listen to books primarily. And you can do that too, by the way. Audiobooks are great. In fact, what Amazon's doing now, since they own Audible, which is the big audiobook store, they have set it up that when you download a book on the Kindle, for a few bucks more, you can get the audio version. You're reading, and this is great for people with poor vision, you're reading along in the book, but it's also reading it to you at the same time. I've been doing that lately, and it's great. Because sometimes you want to see the text or annotate it, things like that. 8888-ASK-LEO. More of your calls right after this. I should have mentioned, and I apologize for not making this clear, that if you go out, you're getting, our last caller getting his first computer, and he's thinking tablet, great. But I should remind you that you need internet access. Internet access. Because a tablet, in fact, any computer these days without access to the internet isn't much fun. How do you get the games on there? How do you get the books on there? How do you surf the web? How do you do email? You need internet. Now, all tablets come in two flavors. There's the Wi-Fi tablets that will get internet from a Wi-Fi, but then you'd have to go out and on your own get an internet access. Internet. It's hard to say internet without saying internet. And I would like to enunciate. You must get an internet service provider of your own. But they're also, the second flavor of tablets has built-in 3G or LTE access to the internet built into it, for which you pay the phone company 20 or 30 bucks a month. So don't forget that part. That's kind of important. So when you get your iPad, make sure you get the iPad with LTE. And it's 100 bucks more. This is pretty typical because you have to put another radio in it. It has GPS now. And because you can get internet access almost anywhere you go within, you know, as long as you're in cell phone range, that means you can use it for mapping too, which is really handy. Great, beautiful maps, and it knows exactly where you are. So it's worth doing that. Now, how much internet? You do have a choice. Some Android tablets offer free lifetime internet from T-Mobile, but read the fine print. It's 200 megabytes a month. In 1989, that was a lot, but nowadays it's probably not so much. You probably are going to want, I would start with 2 gigabytes a month, and I think that's 20 bucks from AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile. And then you may say, oh, I need more. After a few months, you may say, you know, I use 3 or 4 gigs. If you start watching video, like watch Netflix movies on it, you'll need more. But start with 2 gigabytes. That's usually enough. 8888-ASK-LEO. Back to the phones we go. Lewis in Hollywood. Hello, Lewis.
Mr. President.
Yes, sir.
First of all, I think I remember seeing paintings like that on Rod Serling's night gallery.
It looks like a night gallery painting, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks very much to Keith Hudson, who sent me that oil painting. I've got his name now. Keith Hudson, HUTSON.com.
And speaking of creepy, BGR.com called Canvas Fingerprinting the creepiest internet tracking tool yet.
What is that? Oh, yeah, I saw this. Gizmodo broke the story. Boy Genius Report did it as well. It is not. We've known about this for a long time. So let me talk a little bit about what it is. I don't find it creepy, but I understand some people might. When you visit a website, Facebook is an example. They'll put a token, they'll use a technology called cookies, a benign technology, which is necessary. It's kind of, think of it as settings for your internet website. So it knows what your last page is. It knows what your login is. They'll save a token in your cookie that says, oh, no problem. This is Lewis. Next time he comes, he doesn't have to do his password. This token will be good for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And you've experienced this. You go to Facebook the first time you log in. The next time you don't have to log in. That token identifies you uniquely. It takes the place of your password. People, though, understandably want privacy on the internet, and they're nervous about this because that token's there all the time. So anytime you go to a page with an advertisement on it that can read the token, it knows who you are. And so people think of this as a way of tracking your use of the internet. Within limits, it is capable of doing that. These cookies can track you. So a lot of people turn off cookies, delete cookies. They set the setting, which is, I would say, the kind of the right proper setting, which is to not allow third-party cookies, which means you can Facebook can set a cookie when you're on the Facebook site, but it can't set a cookie when you're seeing an ad from Facebook on another site. Reason the Facebook cookie is a little pernicious is because, you know, those Facebook likes, like buttons you see everywhere? Well, that knows you're you. And so whenever you go to a page, whatever you do, just visiting and looking at the page, when that like button gets loaded, Facebook goes, ah, I see Lewis. He's on, KimKardashian.com. So anytime you see a Facebook like button, if you have a Facebook token stored in a cookie, that like button can check the token and identify you uniquely. So people who want to preserve their privacy on the net, I think a futile thing to try to do, but if I understand you want to. They surf incognito, for instance, or they clear cookies, or they use tools to prevent these cookies from being set. That's fine. What Gizmodo and Boy Genius Report and others are pointing out is that that's not the only way you can be identified. It turns out, really, that the browser leaks enough information about you that you can be uniquely identified. It won't know your name, unless you give it your name. It won't know, it will just know that it's you. And the reason is that you can ask the browser, well, what's the screen resolution? What version of Flash is he using? What version of Java is he using? What plugins does he have? There's enough detail you can get from a browser. All of this is designed to make it convenient for you to surf, right? A web page can very reasonably wants to know how big your screen is, so they give you the right size images, as an example. However, as many have noted, and this is not new, I'm surprised this story got so much attention. Because we've known about this. We did a show about it 2 years ago. It's on our Security Now program. This has been around for ages. Everybody's known about this. You can use other means to uniquely identify somebody when they visit your site. They don't know it's Leo. They don't know it's Lewis. They just know it's that person who was here 2 weeks ago. Now, here's the problem. If it's Facebook, they do know it's Lewis. Because at the same time as Facebook is setting a token on your computer to make it easy to log in, they could also be noting Lewis's screen resolution, his plugin versions, and a bunch of other stuff that really pretty much uniquely identifies you. That's why they call it a fingerprint. Your particular settings, those settings that it can deduce from the browser, that it can query the browser enough, all of them together are unique. Maybe one in 20,000, one in 100,000. They're one of a kind, just as a fingerprint is. And so if they know, because you told them, I'm Lewis, I went to Belvedere High School and Pomona Junior College, and I am 58 years old. You've told them all that because it's Facebook. Well, Facebook can aggregate that with that unique fingerprint. Now, when you go visit KimKardashian.com, they say, hey, it's Lewis again. So the real point is that deleting your cookies, clearing your cookies, traveling in incognito mode, a lot of these things, they don't, and what a surprise, they don't actually hide your identity on the net. They don't. So I guess the question to ask is, can you use the internet without giving out any personal information? Yeah, of course. If you don't tell Facebook your name or any other site, then they won't know your name. They might know that there's some particular computer visiting all these different sites. By the way, every time you visit a site, your computer provides them with your unique one and only IP address. That's how the internet works. If you didn't do that, you wouldn't be able to have a conversation with the site. You wouldn't be able to get pages. They have to know where to send the pages. So it's as if saying, well, you know, I tell everybody my home phone number, but I don't want them to know anything else. They know it. And if they want to associate it with other information, they can. So it's pretty hard to hide your privacy online. I always use this analogy in Breaking Bad where he went to, was it New Hampshire, Maine? Massachusetts? No. It was somewhere. Somewhere far away. And he had no electricity. He wasn't allowed to use the internet because he was trying to hide, you know, Heisenberg was trying to hide from the bad guys. You can't use the internet. You can't use a credit card. You can't even have electrical power because all of that identifies you. So you really want to be anonymous, you kind of have to go back to the 18th century. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Don in Mission Viejo, California. You're next. Hi, Don.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Listening to you while on hold, playing the Kim Kardashian.
I was doing a little demo during the break just so people can understand what they're missing. It's a very popular game right now. The story is quite interesting. I'll tell it a little later on, but yeah.
So, Leo, maybe you can help me out. Yeah. We started a company about 7 years ago. We've done all the social media. We you know, we have the website, the blog. We're, you know, we're on Facebook, Twitter.
Good.
And I like to take it. We have testimonials on our website, and we have great clients, but they're located all over the country. And
what is the product? Can you tell me?
We're a finance company.
Okay.
And we buy business invoices, so we're a service company where we help small businesses get financing.
Okay, so it's a B2B or business-to-business product.
Exactly, it's a B2B, and what I'd like to do is our clients are all over the country, and I'd like to create like a video testimonial montage, but I want to do it in the most unobtrusive manner, but I want it to be high quality as well, and it's... You know, it's hard because they're all over the country. And I'm wondering, is there a way I could do that other than, say, Skype or them videoing, you know, a testimonial on their phone? Is there a good way to do that?
Well, you know, if it depends how much you want to put your clients out, I guess. If a client really loves you and they're willing to go a little extra mile for you, what you want to do is find the best camera that they have, that they own, or you could send them a camera. I mean, depends on how important this is to you. If I were you, what I would do, and this is, by the way, what Oprah does. You've seen Skype calls on Oprah and other shows. Oprah has a kit that they send out. It has a camera. It has lights. I mean, Oprah's probably a little more over the top than you want to be, but they put it in a Pelican case, which is a hard shell case. It's all set up with instructions. They usually send out a producer too, but they have a Skype kit because they don't trust that the person that they're going to talk to on Skype has all the gear that they need to get the best quality. If you do that, by the way, Skype can look very, very good. But let's say these clients, you ask them, hey, would you mind doing a testimonial? And they say, yes. Would you mind? We'd just like to send you out a kit with instructions. It's a tripod. It's a video camera. You just set it up on the tripod. You press record. You go on the other side. You sit down and you say, I love these guys. It made me $1 million. You press stop. You put it back in the case and send it back to us. If you have clients that are willing to do that, that would give you the best result.
Is it, and that sounds great, is it something where if I ship it to them, it's not too heavy or bulky? Where
Well, you get a I'll tell you what Oprah does.
Okay.
I mean, look, this is going to cost you a little bit, but you're going to get it back unless you send it to a client who's nefarious. But you want something called a Pelican case.
Okay.
This is what photographers, videographers, and others use. There are a couple of basic cases. There may be, you can go down and get them at Office Depot or whatever. The 1510 is the one I use. It's a rolling case. It has a handle. It's about $139. And then you want to get what they call the pick and pull interior, which is a foam interior that you can take little pieces out of to match what you want to put in there. The kit will also include, I would recommend, a Canon Vixia camera. We, on our shows, use the G20, which is about $1,000, maybe it's $800 now. But a good camcorder. You're going to have memory card in the camcorder. You might want to get a couple of lights. I like the Ego lights from Lowell. These are inexpensive. They use fluorescent bulbs. If one breaks, it's not the end of the world. You can send them one or two to make sure they're well lit. You'd have to give them written instructions or call them up and say, okay, let me walk you through this, or even Skype with them, because even though you're not going to use the Skype video, you can at least see how it looks sort of over Skype. And I think a tripod, you'd want an inexpensive tripod. The whole kit wouldn't set you back more than $1,500. And, of course, you're going to get it back. So you could send it out one by one. Shipping on this, well, you know, you're not gonna overnight it, but it's not gonna be horribly expensive. I think the case itself, and you might be able to get a smaller one. The case itself doesn't. It's small enough that you could put it in an overhead compartment. That's 22 inches, and I don't see a weight on here, but it's not horribly expensive. This is something very doable, and this is exactly what the big TV shows, I imagine CNN does the same thing. I've seen Oprah's kit. It's quite elaborate, and fancier lights, and all of that stuff. But it certainly works. That's if you want the best quality video. Skype, in many cases, is fine. It just depends on what you're looking for. You know, the way to cheat this, and you see this all the time, is to get these, make a Skype call, get it as good as you can get it, you know, talk with the guy, say, can you move it around? Don't have a window behind them. Make sure there's light in their face, not behind them, until you get it as best you can. Record a testimonial, and then you have your video editor use special effects to make it look, you know, black and white or jump cut it or whatever. And then people don't pay attention to the video quality. You could also, and this is not a bad idea, almost every relatively large town has somebody who works in the town as a videographer, as a shooter. You can also call them and have, if you really want the best quality, have them set it up. Most of these guys and gals will produce it as well. We use that. We frequently will use that when we were in Atlanta for Comic-Con, for instance, or San Diego for Comic-Con. We'd call up and we'd get a shoot. You know, you look in the, there are real guides that, R-E-E-L guides that will tell you who works in that town as a freelance television news shooter, things like that. Those guys are a little more expensive because they have all the equipment. You might be spending $1,500 for a half day, something like that. Good luck. I think it's a great idea. Richard, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I got a problem.
Okay.
Trying to take a snapshot of a photograph from an old video that was recorded on DVDs.
Okay.
For keepsake, right?
Okay, yeah.
Trying to be modern in 1999.
And hey, no, that's good. It's good. You've got the DVD now. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we did 8mm also.
Okay.
To bring everything up to speed before everything just returns into dust.
Good. And you got it all. You want to get that videotape converted to digital, of course.
There's exactly. We've got it digitized. But now my son is getting married next year.
Oh, and you want that still.
We need one still from when he was wearing tux when he was ring bearer at my cousin's wedding back in 87.
So some DVD, if you put it on a computer, this is easy to do.
On my computer, but it comes with a video TS file, and I can't...
No. You have to play it back in your video player and take a still that way.
And take a still just off this television?
Many video players will let you... Not take a picture of the television. Many video players, if you play it on a computer, will say, you can just say, take a snap of this frame. If yours doesn't, the DVD player you use on your computer doesn't, VLC does, and that's free from videoland.org.
Okay.
And then so what you do is you go to that part in the video, you pause it, and you take a snapshot. Worst case, you could do a screenshot, but you'll get best quality if you use the VLC snapshot feature. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'd like to mention our fine sponsor, Prosper.com. This is Silicon Valley's answer to getting your coat and tie on, getting all dressed up, combing your hair, going into a bank, hat in hand. Please, sir, can I have some money? You don't have to do that. What if you could get, right now, within 3 days, $35,000? What would you do? Would you pay off high-rate credit cards? Maybe start a business? Do that home improvement project? Well, it's easy if you visit Prosper.com. Actually, go to Prosper.com/twit so they know where you heard it. Prosper is Silicon Valley's answer to the bank loan. It is what they call a peer-to-peer lending service. So basically, they're bringing people with money to lend together with borrowers, you. And it works so well, they now have 2 million members, lenders and borrowers alike. They have over $1 billion in funded loans. And, I mean, the rates are great. They're fixed rate, multi-year terms available. They're unsecured, so you don't have to worry about putting up collateral. And if you're wondering, well, what kind of rate am I going to get? It's very simple. Go to prosper.com/twit. You can fill out an easy online application. They ask you a limited amount of detail, not a lot. By the way, this will not affect your credit score. So you can get that rate, and then you'll know. That's all I ask. Get the rate. See, imagine 72 hours, $35,000. And for a limited time, they're offering Twit viewers a $50 prepaid Visa card when you get that loan. That's kind of a nice bonus. Prosper.com/twit. Silicon Valley's answer to the loan racket. Peer-to-peer lending. It's a great idea. Prosper, PROSPER.com/twit. Up to $35,000 in 3 days, plus that $50 Visa prepaid card. Prosper.com/twit. Enjoy. Oh, and by the way, we thank him so much for supporting the Tech Guy podcast. Impossible for us to bring you this show absolutely free. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, digital photography, and all that jazz. Chris Marquardt, our photo guru, joins us in about half an hour to talk about digital photography. I'll talk with you about anything having to do with computers. Just call 888-88-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Toll free from the U.S. or Canada. And you can always call with Skype, so it'll be free from wherever. 888-ASK-LEO. Apple's done something unusual for them, a public, free public beta of the next version of their OS X operating system. Currently, it's Mavericks. That's the OS X you use if you get a new Mac or if you update. One nice thing Apple does, those updates are free. This next one, which they've already announced, will be coming out in the fall. It's called Yosemite. OS X 10.10. And you can get on the list. I think they're allowing 1 million people to try it. This is Microsoft pioneered this, I think. Apple's done it, I think they did it once before, many moons ago. But Microsoft's done it with the last few versions of Windows, the public beta. Now, the difference here is the public beta, when you do it with Windows, if you were downloading, say, the pre-release version of Windows 8, you didn't get a free version of Windows after that. It would expire, and you would have to reinstall. There was no way to kind of upgrade the test version to a full paid version. You'd have to reinstall. Reinstall Windows, reinstall all your applications. And that was kind of a pain. Because Apple gives away their operating system, there really isn't any disincentive to try Yosemite. Because when the official Yosemite comes out, it'll just be transparently turned into the official version. Any changes or modifications will be done automatically, and you'll just be sailing along. It's very, very interesting because Apple's been very, you know, don't do this unless you back up everything. In fact, when you do the install, it even says, did you back up? Back up now. You know, and they're right because they don't want liability if somebody loses their data. They say, don't do this on a production machine, a machine you need. Do it on a secondary machine or create a partition, blah, blah, blah. Of course, I violated all those rules. I just put it on my main machine. I didn't back up. I just did it. And I bet you that's what most people do. And no problems at all. In fact, it hasn't crashed. It's been very reliable. I haven't seen any issues at all. It's running on a late model, brand new Mac Pro. It won't work on all Macintosh models, and you should check the compatibility list. You know, there are a number of, quite a few new features, most of which you won't really notice until you use your new iPhone or your new iPad this fall because they require iOS 8. Cosmetically, it looks very different. The fonts are different. The icons are flatter. They're making their desktop operating system look more like their tablet and phone operating system. That makes sense. It's a cleaner look. Apple's really gone through some big changes with the passing of Steve Jobs. Tim Cook, of course, became CEO. And Tim is not the visionary, the design guru that Steve Jobs was. He knows that. He's an operations guy. He's a more traditional CEO who relies on other members of his team to do the design, to do the look and feel. He doesn't do it. You know, Steve Jobs, every detail had to go under his scrutiny, and he had to approve it. Even down to the stitching on the leather on the shuttle bus that took Apple employees from San Francisco to Cupertino, Steve had to approve it. The T-shirts in the company store, Steve had to approve it. It's not that way anymore. Most companies don't run that. I was thinking about this the other day. In most companies, Satya Nadella doesn't have to see every detail. He has to set the course for the ship with the help of the board of directors and the investors. But he doesn't oversee every single detail. In most companies, it doesn't work that way. The CEO is a leader and hires trusted people especially in technology companies where the CEOs often are not that technical. Tim Cook is not a designer. He's not a programmer. And so those people hire people who know this stuff. And Tim's lucky because he does have Johnny Ive, Sir Johnny Ive, working for him. He's the designer that Steve Jobs brought in very early on. He designed the IMAX, the first Ghost Beautiful Bondi Blue IMAX. He designed the iPod, the iPhone, all the Macintoshes since the Bondi Blue iMac. And so he really has a very clear, strong vision. I bet you Sir Johnny, he has been knighted. He is Sir Johnny Ive. He's British. I bet you Sir Johnny in the Jobs era had to get approval for every single design, probably made 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, then brought them, and then Steve would throw out 11 and pick the 12th. I don't know what the process is anymore. I have a feeling Tim Cook does not wield such a tight ship, such a tight control of what's going on. And apparently, this new version of the operating system is very Johnny Ive inspired. Johnny likes flat. He doesn't like what we call skeuomorphism, where something looks like the physical object. You won't see any green felt or crinkled up paper. You won't see on the Apple Notes application, you won't see torn pages. That's gone. It's all what they call digital native now. The thinking being, and we've all used computers long enough now that we don't need those cues to remind us of that a notepad is like a physical notepad. We understand what a digital notepad is. I like the look. It doesn't take too much to get used to. The new notifications is very good. It has a world clock in it. It has stock. It has weather. It's a very useful. It replaces kind of the dashboard, those widgets. It's a very useful little slide-out notification bar. But most of the new features, the continuity, a lot of the stuff that they're touting or they were very excited about when they announced this in June isn't really available yet because I'm not using iOS 8. Probably you aren't either. So to answer your unspoken question, should you install this? I'd say if you're curious, it's safe to install it. It's very mature. It's almost ready to go, I would say. But I don't think there's any urgency. Most of the new features are just not available till you get a new iPhone or an iPad. I'm a Mac fan. I am. In fact, you probably have heard me on this show say, people, Windows for business, Mac for home. And I have to say now, I'm amending that a little bit, that unless you know you need a full-purpose computer, if you're doing video editing or photo editing or, you know, 3D architecture design, that you probably shouldn't even get a desktop computer. You should probably get a tablet. If your phone does 90% of what you want to do, surf the web and get the mail, just the screen's too small, get a tablet. You'll have a bigger screen, and you'll have a much better experience. You won't have to worry about security. You won't have to worry about spyware and adware. It just works. So for a lot of people, a Chromebook, for instance, which is a very stripped-down, simple version, or an iPad or an Android device, those are probably the right thing. However, if you need a computer, I have to say, there's nothing I can't do with a Mac, including run Windows. Runs Windows quite nicely. Thank you very much. Beef Team in the chat room is asking a good question, though. Apple has decided to not continue on its high-end photo editing software, Aperture. You could still use it. They're not going to pull it away. They're just not going to update it. And he says, I have 10,000 images on Aperture. Should I move them to Lightroom? I like Lightroom. That's Adobe's product. They continue to develop it for both Mac and PC. And I think it's a really good choice. So I think there's no problem moving. None at all. Now with Steam, a Mac is even a credible gaming platform. Not as complete as Windows, but fairly credible. 10,000 is nothing. 10,000 images, nothing. That won't take any time. 8888 Ask Leo. The website techguylabs.com has all the information I spew on the show. You don't have to worry about writing links down. It also has a link to our great chat room. You may hear me from time to time mention somebody in the chat room. Easy to get into. It's free, and it's a lot of fun. All you have to do is visit techguylabs.com. Click the link there. Instructions are available. 797 people in our chat room today. And I always think of them as kind of the kids in the back of the class. My brain externalized. Very helpful. Nice to have you. 8888 Ask Leo. We go back to the phone right after this. 8888-ASK-LEO, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. Jay in Riverside, California. Hi, Jay.
Always a pleasure to listen to the Ethan Hunt of Computers and Electronics.
Wait a minute, the who?
Ethan Hunt.
Who's Ethan Hunt?
Mission Impossible.
Oh! This mission, should you choose to accept it. This show will self-destruct in 33 seconds. Good luck, Jim.
And, of course, the secretary will disavow any knowledge
of my action, yeah.
Go on vacation. Anyhow, my query is there a Kelly Blue Book printed or online for computers?
No, there isn't. And that's partly because computer value disappears so rapidly. There isn't much of a resale market. The reason there's a Kelley Blue Book for cars is because there's a very brisk resale market for cars, isn't there? In fact, there are a lot of people, I think they're very smart people, who say never buy a new car. The minute you drive it off the lot, it loses 20-30%. Buy a year-old used car, you're going to get a great deal. And that's where Kelley Blue Books are very valuable. I think partly it's also because there's so many different kinds of PCs. It would be a very big book. But I think the safest thing to do is to assume that that computer, after about 3 years, has zero value. And that, yes, he's coughing. that's the real problem. So many pages of the Blue Book would be devoted to zero that it wouldn't be worth it. One way to find out what the market is paying for that old computer is maybe go to eBay and see people who are selling that computer. What do you have to sell, Jay?
No, I'm just in general. I was wondering.
I'll tell you another thing. Just my recommendation. I don't think you should buy a used computer. I don't think that's a good.
Get a new.
This is not like a car. First of all, it's not that expensive. But also, there's a big difference between last year's computer and this year's computer. You buy a used computer, you're buying somebody else's problem. That's true in cars too. But for some, I guess cars are more fixable. Once a computer goes off, it's bad. So the only exception to this rule is refurbished computers. And it's a very narrow exception. A refurbished computer is a used computer, but mostly used only because technically it's used. This happened when a lot of companies were, let's say you buy a computer. You open it up, you look at it, and you go, I didn't want that, or I got the wrong one, or you turn it on even, and you say, oh, what was I thinking? You box it back up, you bring it back to the store. Many stores were reselling those as new, because they are, basically. They were used not at all or only very quickly. The state of California, and I think many other states now, passed laws saying that cannot be sold as new. That is a used computer. So companies didn't want to, I mean, the used computer has such a negative connotation, has so little value, that they came up with refurbished. And really, if you buy a refurbished computer from the original manufacturer, don't get it from a third party. That really is a used computer. That's a computer that the third party bought, has fixed up and is used, and I do not buy it. But if you go to Apple, for instance, or Dell, and you go to their outlet, and you buy a refurb there, if it's a current model, in almost every case, that's just something that was opened and sent back, never used, or used very, very little. The full manufacturer's warranty still applies. They've checked it over to make sure there's nothing on it. They've wiped the drive, put the original install on it. That's fine. Of course, you're not going to save that much. You might save a few $100. But both Apple, Dell, and other big companies do have a refurb marketplace. Dell calls it their outlet. I can't remember what outlet Apple calls it. But these are okay. A refurb computer from the original manufacturer, current model, with a full warranty, that's fine. You may save a few $100. But I am not crazy about buying a couple-year-old computer. I think that's a false economy. I've heard so many people go to eBay and basically get ripped off. One of the rip-offs, if you buy a Windows machine, is that they put a version of Windows. They put Windows on there, but they've also used it on 10 other used computers. And you can't ever get a license for it. It's just not worth it. It's just not worth it. And especially now that computer prices have dropped so much. Thanks for the call, Jay. 8888 Ask Leo. Mike in Riverside. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm good. What's up?
Not too much. Just learning everything I ever need to know about Kim Kardashian and why my gray hair is black in the morning.
You're listening in between. People who are listening to the radio go, I didn't hear anything about that. You're listening to what's going on during the commercials, aren't you?
Yeah, I did. I started just trying to figure out how much of a time delay there was and then got wrapped up in all the trivia.
Well, if you're on hold, you hear everything, including what's going on during the commercials. And so that's part of the thrill and joy of being on hold with this show.
Yeah, that's right. I can't wait to get some bangers and mash.
I'll tell you what the delay is, since you want to know. 40 seconds.
40 seconds?
Yeah. Very so you remember they used to call it a 7-second delay. Radio stations usually actually have a tape loop, and it would go for 7 seconds. That's so they could dump you out if you swore at them, if any profanity. They press the dump button. Well, now we use digital delays, and it can be longer. And so that's better because if you swore right now, Nathan would press the dump button. And then if the next caller swore at you, he could dump it again because he's got a total of 40 seconds. Now, I have to say, and I don't want to knock on wood here, but we've never had to use the dump button on this show. I've been doing this show for more than 20 years, and I've never had to. So
very good.
I think tech people don't do that. Now watch the next call.
Maybe this one.
You can say Baba Booey, though. That's okay. So what can I do for you?
Well, here's my question, yeah. Probably it's been answered 1,000 times before on your show, but we've got a small business, and we've got some of our guys are on Mac, some are on PCs, some have iPhones, some have Android-based smartphones. We're getting ready to buy tablets, and the question is, do we get everybody iPads or the other kind of tablets? Does it matter if a guy's got a PC, Windows-based PC?
No. Nowadays, in this modern world, it's all what we call heterogeneous. It's all mixed and matched. That's where the cloud has really come in very handy. Okay. For instance, both Microsoft and Apple have office suites that work on all other computers via the Internet. So iCloud, the office suite there, Office 365 on the Microsoft side, works on both. So more, it used to be, there really was in the old days, and you obviously remember this, the big difference between Mac and PC, that's gone away. What you should do is buy the tablet that's right for you, has the right price, does the things you need it to do. And I think nowadays Android tablets are very, very good. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I hear the music. It means it's time for Chris Marquardt, our photography guru, digital photography time. Chris is the host of the Tips from the Top Floor podcast, does great workshops all over the world, including Everest. And you can find out more at discoverthetopfloor.com. He also has a great Lightroom class. I should have mentioned this for the guy who wants to move from Aperture. Highly recommend his Lightroom class. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I am well. Welcome back. So last week we had John Miller on. He is your buddy, the guy who goes up to Everest with you, the rest of Everest.com, and talks about
the reason I'm doing these things.
Oh, it was his idea, huh?
Yes.
So he talked about and showed his drone video footage, and I gather you've purchased one.
Yeah, but this is, compared to what John does, this is a tiny little toy, and it's an 0.3 megapixel camera in that, so it's nowhere near anything that John
can do.
Yeah,
but it's $50 bucks.
I caught the bug, you know. I wanted to try this. I want to give it a try. And flying this little thing outside is scary because the wind kind of blows it back and forth. You have to do a lot of stabilizing. But hey, to get some training and to kind of, yeah. Oh, that's a tech selfie there. Drone selfie. To get some training, that's kind of a nice little thing. And you can fly it indoors. And if it crashes, it's so lightweight, it won't really get hurt.
I really love this. Now, Jeff has an... So we have the DJI Phantom, which is the same
that's
one.
That's much better.
One John's using. This is something... What is this kind of in the middle? This is Parrot AR Drone was the first company to do this that I remember. Uh-huh. And they had created an iPhone app and a drone that was self-writing and all of that. This is their less expensive AR drone. It has a camera built into it. How much is this, Jeff?
$199.
And have you used the camera yet?
Two cameras.
Wow.
Those are really, really getting affordable.
Yeah, it's amazing. You're going to see these all over the place. And, of course, the minute we have an Amazon drone crash into one of these drones, we're going to have a real problem.
Let's hope this is not going to happen.
I think the skies are going to start getting crowded with these things. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Well,
did you have to stabilize the video after you shot it? Is this...
Absolutely. This needed, you know, the camera is fixed. There's no gimbal head that keeps it steady. So when a gust of wind blows at the drone, the camera will kind of shake as well. So yeah, that required lots of post-processing. That's the best I could do.
Did you do it yourself, or YouTube now has an anti-shake feature?
I did it this myself with Final Cut Pro. The YouTube and anti-shake is amazing. The shake they can take out of videos is, I don't know how they do this. I mean,
this is fun.
It's good what they do.
I do a little sidebar because I think these are fun. But what do you want to talk about today?
I want to talk about creativity. You know, photographers always want to be more creative. And so the question came up last week, actually, from one of my workshop participants. What is creativity and how can I improve it? And
yeah, because I'm not very creative. And I feel like it's hard because I'm doing pictures and I feel like I want to be more creative. And they're just kind of snapshotty.
And you know, creativity in the end is coming up with something new based on things that already exist,
right?
Things you already know.
Right.
And almost every great invention over time has been a creative endeavor based on other inventions that were there before, like electricity, and then the light bulb, and then radio. Radio couldn't have come to life without the light bulb, for example,
right?
Because they had to make tubes and things. So they all built up on top of each other. And the same is true in photography. If you, for example, you look at HDR, for example. That can only exist by being able to align photos properly and then using certain filtering techniques that are already there, or the miniature effect. You see that can only be done with a tilt shift lens, and then they combine it with video, which wasn't done before, and then some special color and contrast treatment. So all of these things kind of built on top of each other. So the point is, in order to be able to put things together, existing things together, you must know them first. You must have practiced them first. And that's what I call filling your creative toolbox.
Get the technique down, and then you can... Well, you know where I see this is in Picasso. If you look at Picasso's early work, he was an amazing draftsman. He could make perfect, photorealistic, gorgeous sketches. And you'd look at that, and most people would say, well, that's good. I got a career. I don't have to go any farther. But once he learned how to do that, then he started, and of course his later work, his master work, is not realistic at all. It's abstract.
And you know, there are a few things to do as a photographer that I think, even if you think they don't make sense at the time, even if you think that, why should I do them? Go practice some things that are seemingly simple, but if you haven't done them before, you won't have them as tools later. So super simple, a few things. Shoot from an ant's perspective or from a bird's eye view, from different perspectives. Don't leave that eyes like your eye height view. Leave that and try a different perspective, or shoot through things. Take your pair of sunglasses and shoot through that, or shoot through bubble wrap, or I don't know, an orange Tic Tac container, something like that. You will be amazed what these things can do to your photography, and then you forget about them later, and then maybe half a year later you think of something new, or you want to think of something new, and then you start piecing those things together, and then all of a sudden you're doing, I don't know, bird's eye photography through bubble wrap.
Add to your toolbox, in other words. And
Fill that toolbox with things that are unusual, or things that you wouldn't throw off the focus deliberately, or shoot from the hip without looking through the viewfinder, or underexpose your pictures on purpose for a while.
I've heard
people play with these things.
Doing that kind of artificial rule for a whole day. Like today, I'm just going to shoot from the ground level all day.
Yes.
And
I do that too.
Yeah. Kind of fun. And that does get the gears spinning too. Here's another way to do it. Participate in our photo assignment. Every month, Chris will give you an assignment. There's no reward for this. We just want to encourage you to get out and take pictures. What we ask that you do is illustrate a word or a concept with brand new shots. You can upload one a week to our Flickr group, the Tech Guy group on Flickr.com. That's free. And then at the end of the month, Chris will pick three images to review. We're in the middle of a project right now. What is the word of the month?
The word of the month is goal.
Goal!
That's it.
But it doesn't have to be a World Cup style goal. It could just be a goal of some kind. And if you want to see what people have done already, maybe get a little creative stimulation, flickr.com, and then search for the Tech Guy group, and you'll see a lot of goals in there. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will accept you in if you haven't yet joined, and please upload. It's a great little community, even if you just want to. Renee often does weekly assignments and things like that. It's just an excuse to get out there and take some shots. Chris, it's great to have you. Discover Lightroom.com for those Lightroom courses. Pay what you want, which I like. Is that working out for you?
It's okay. It's okay. Some more people could choose the more right facing options.
People, but don't be such cheapskates.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay.
Well, it's a great video series that really helps you understand Lightroom, and is really useful. And of course, his podcast is great too. Tips from the Top Floor. Thank you, Chris Marquardt.
Absolutely.
And go out there and take pictures of goal, whatever that is to you. Think about that. Maybe use a drone. Do we ever accept videos? I guess you could put videos on Flickr.
Well, so far we haven't done videos. Might be a bit unfair to the majority who's still shooting stills.
All right, no video allowed. Unless you want to do it as just an exercise.
But you could shoot a still from a drone.
That's true. How does that work? Do they actually have a still capability or?
Or you could take a frame out of the video. Or if you have a GoPro, that shoots stills as well.
I think if you're going to do it.
You could have shoot a still every 3 seconds and then choose
video.
The right one.
Come on. The whole cool thing is just that you're going up and down. It's a lot of fun. Thank you, Chris. We'll talk again real soon. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. More of your calls right after this. So, our show today brought to you by our friends at Gazelle. Actually, this is very timely because if you're getting a new phone, then you ought to know about Gazelle for the old phone. Gazelle's the place you can sell your used gadgets, get a great price, get cash, PayPal, or an Amazon gift card, and get an extra 5% at Gazelle, GAZELLE.com. This makes it so easy to get your next gadget. And one of the great things about Gazelle, you can lock in your price today. You've got 30 days. So you could say, hey, I know I'm getting a new phone. Let me sell the old one. Lock it in. And when you get the new phone and then you're ready to go, then you pull the trigger. They pay the postage. They send you a box. They will also buy old tablets. So if you bought, if you bought a Nexus 7 and you said, it's not really the right thing, they'll buy it back from you. In many cases, they will buy broken iPhones and iPads too, because those have some value. I have to say, it's a really great idea. Gazelle has paid out now more than $100 million to over 700,000 customers. It really is a great way. And by the way, if you forget or can't, because it's broken, wipe your data, they'll do it for you. Customer service is fabulous. People really love Gazelle. 1.5 million trade-ins to date. So visit gazelle.com. At least get a quote. You're no obligation. Go through that old gadget drawer, get quotes, find out how much money is sitting in your drawers. And if you buy a lot of stuff on Amazon, my tip, get the Amazon gift card. They'll bump it up 5%. GAZELLE, gazelle.com. They're fabulous. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number. Chris is in Miami, Florida. Hi, Chris. Leo Laporte here. Chris? Oh, Chris. Did I push the right button? I didn't. I have to push this button. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
It's 99 degrees. I'm doing pretty good.
Chris, you don't have a Florida accent. You have something a little bit more northern. I'm thinking you're what we call a snowbird.
Well, I actually live here now. It's been 10 years, but originally from New York State, came down from Boston in August of 04.
So you don't get to complain about the weather.
No.
Although 99 degrees with 100% humidity can be a touch uncomfortable.
So when are you coming? My question is, when are you coming over here? And do I have to come out to see you, or can we get you over here on the beaches and the
pines? I'd love to. Sarah Lane, one of our other hosts on the podcast network, goes to Miami Beach regularly. She seems to be going every few months now.
Yeah, but no Leo Laporte.
Well, it's hard for me to leave. I have things to do here. Every weekend I have to do a radio show, and I hate to miss it. So I would love, believe me, one of the dreams we had, and I still have, is to get a beautiful Airstream trailer, equip it with a studio, and then drive across the country, maybe one summer, just take the whole summer and do the show from a different city every week would be kind of fun.
Nice.
Yeah, isn't that a good idea? Yeah. For a while, we were looking into, they have these great buses for rock stars, these rock buses you can lease. And we were thinking about doing that. And those things, they're like little apartment buildings on wheels.
Yeah, but you're a rock star.
Yeah, they also cost rock star money. What can I do for you today?
Well, I have an interesting one for you this time. My mom lives out in California. She lives in San Jose. And she listens to, for years, she's got me listening to a lot of AM radio. Barbara Simpson, she used to be on KS.
Yeah, I know Barbara very well, yeah.
She's on something now called the Talk Pod, which you can hear on SoundCloud. The problem is, Mom does not want to update. So if I get her an iPhone, she does not want to pay for the plan. She wants to turn on the radio and listen to people.
Well, she has Wi-Fi at home?
I don't think so. I'd have to. I don't.
She has to get internet somewhere. I mean, you got to pay for internet somehow. It's not a magic thing.
Well, she wants radio the old way. She doesn't want radio.
Radio? You mean with transmitters and towers?
Well, you know, turn on the radio, listen to Barbara Simpson the way it used to be, and Art Bell. And
I know. I'm still doing radio. I love radio.
I do too. Yeah.
And I don't blame her. But one of the things that's cool about internet radio is you can listen to stations all over the world. You're not limited to just what's local to you. And that's pretty cool. And pretty much every radio station, every terrestrial radio station now also has an internet preference option, which is great. But she has to get internet to do that. If Barbara Simpson's not on a terrestrial station, and I don't think she is,
nope,
then Mom's out of luck.
Yeah, but that's why I called you, to put her back in luck.
Mom, well, first of all, you come visit Mom. We're just up the road a piece.
I know you are.
Then you can visit us. Bring Mom, and I'll set her up. We'll get her all wired up. Probably the least expensive thing to do would be to get a tablet. T-Mobile offers inexpensive tablets with 200 megabytes a month of listening. Now, that's not going to let her listen all day, every day.
I know.
But that's free, okay? And that get her started. And then at the end of the 200 megabytes, then she might start to say, well, maybe it's worth $20 a month to listen all the time.
Well, that's an idea. It's a good idea.
So, most of these internet streams are a mono voice internet stream, probably 40 kilobits per second. You could do the math how much 200 megabytes would be. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be a whole lot of time.
I could pay for it. I could get her a plan at my end, and I just buy her the iPhone.
Why don't you? Now that's a nice boy.
Well, you did it for your mother. I did it for Mama.
You do it for your mama. It's not expensive. So I think a tablet would be a good choice for her. She doesn't sound like she wants a smartphone.
Well, no. The thing is, though, she does have a regular phone, a non-smartphone with AT&T already. I'm trying to nudge her in that direction with an iPhone, but she's stubborn. She's old school. She's 74.
Yeah, my mom's 80. You know what I did? I just gave her a Note 2 because it's 5.5 inches, so it's almost tablet. She has an iPad she loves, but she uses the Note 2 all the time. She's an artist, so she likes the stylus. She can draw on the Note 2. And, of course, it's Sprint, so it's always – she's got plenty of internet through it, so she can listen to the radio or whatever she wants to do. And you know what? A 5-gig-a-month plan from T-Mobile is $30. It's not expensive. That would be a nice gift for Mom.
Yeah, I know. Just like you. We're good boys, aren't we?
We're good boys. We want to take care of Mama.
Yep, we do.
She took care of us. I always think of that. When we were little, she didn't spare any expense, or she took time off from her life to take care of us. So I think it's a nice thing to do. Here's a good one. JTech tells me Stitcher is free unlimited on T-Mobile. I did not know that.
She has AT&T. She's not going to go to T-Mobile. But on AT&T.
Well, but what I'm saying is you could get her a tablet.
Yep, I could.
Many of these tablets have free 200 megabytes a month from T-Mobile. If that includes unlimited Stitcher, that Stitcher's got everything. That would be probably good for her. I also gave my mom Audible books. She listens to audiobooks, too, and that's a good one, too. So there are certainly ways to do that. I would look into this T-Mobile thing. They're making a lot of hay by being the uncarrier. They're the one that's kind of struggling compared to AT&T and Verizon. But even, AT&T has unlimited plans, but I think even a 20 or 2 gigabyte a month plan for $20 would be probably fine. It's too bad she's stuck with that feature phone. If she just had a little bit better phone, she could do it. She's so close, so close. Wait a minute. Now Untoward has given me an interesting website, Podlines, Podlinez. This is a kind of, I think I know what they're doing. It says they will, they can do podcasts, including Barbara Simpson's, on any phone. And my suspicion is what you're doing is you're doing a phone call. I have seen this before where, you know, the way you're listening, the way you're, so it would use minutes. That may not be the best choice, but it might be worth checking out. Podlinez, Podlinez. Audio content on any phone. My suspicion is on a dumb phone, you're making a phone call. Yep, they have phone calls. So that's going to use your minutes. I don't know if that's a great solution. Driver is online. Driver Mike from Riverside, California. Hi, Driver Mike.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm great. Are you driving a truck?
Yes, I am, but at the moment I'm sitting still.
Good man. Safety first.
Yes, sir. I have a laptop at Toshiba, and it was giving me some problems, so I reinstalled Windows, and now I cannot get on the internet whatsoever.
What do you use for internet? Do you have a...
I'm on the Verizon Fios, and I've got, you know,
okay,
their internet.
Okay, so what you're going to have to do probably is go back into the settings. You blew out all the settings, most likely, when you reinstalled Windows.
I mean, I got a fresh copy of Windows 7. But,
that's good. You did the right thing. And when you first got Fios, they gave you a piece of paper with all these settings on it.
Right.
Which you've lost, I'm sure, because everybody does.
Sir, I still have it.
Ah, good man. You've got an organized file system or something. So you're going to need to go through those. Yeah, you're going to go through those. You're going to need to make sure you're using the password that's in your router, because you probably put security on your router, I hope.
Yes, sir. I did all that. I mean, I even hooked up an Ethernet cable from the router directly to the... put it on the laptop, and when it saved my router name and password, and I still could not get it. It could not identify.
That's interesting. So normally Windows, you set it up to automatically get the configuration from the router. And you're doing it exactly as the Verizon instructions said.
Yeah.
I think it's a call to Verizon. They may be doing something like, this is not unusual, logging the MAC address of your computer and then blocking any other computer. You should check with them and see if there's something like that going on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And it's time to talk about computers and the internet and home theaters, smartphones, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. We can talk high tech with you. Just call in. Heather will take your call, and then we'll get you on the air as quickly as we can, starting with David in Rancho Cucamonga. Hi, David.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. Welcome to the show.
Hey, about a month ago, my cable service went out, and I called the cable company, and the guy came out, and he got one TV running, and he said, oh, by the way, you're going to have to get a cable box for every other TV in your home. And now I've got another 7 TVs that don't have cable boxes, never had them, and all of a sudden they don't work. He said, well, in order to provide better service, we're giving you digitally encrypted video.
Let me put that in quote. In order to provide you with better service, we're going to force you to have a set-top box on all your TVs. In addition, we'll charge you $7 a month for each and every one. Yeah, is it Comcast?
No, it is Charter.
Charter, they all do it. You know what happened? Remember a few years ago, the Federal Communications Commission forced broadcast stations to go digital. And all of a sudden, instead of using your rabbit ears, you had to have with a regular analog TV, you had to have a special higher frequency antenna with a digital converter box. At that time, the cable companies went, I imagine, excellent. And they sent out notices saying, we're converting to digital. They were hoping that the impression the public would get is that this was part of that they were being forced to do that. Of course, they weren't being forced to do that. Until that time, cable companies frequently had analog channels that were not scrambled, that you could just literally put the cable into your TV and watch. But what's happened is that at about that time, they've changed that all over. Now, every channel is digital, and nobody at the FCC or anybody stopped them. The real reason they're doing it is, well, the obvious one, they make more money because they force you to have a set-top box, but also they can get more channels on the same line. Those analog channels took up the equivalent of, I think, about 10 digital channels. So for every analog channel, you know, channel 4 used to be analog, but that was a lot of bandwidth used for that analog signal. Once it's digital, it's packetized, they can get more data down the pipe. So that's the other reason. It is to your benefit. There are more channels available on your cable box now. So you do have to... They win. There's nothing you can do about it. You have to get a cable box now.
Well, I'm looking at converting my whole system over to making something more of a network-based system.
Well, here's what you could do. If you want to... This actually will save you the rental. It won't save you money because you're going to have to pay for some stuff. You can get a TiVo, get their Romeo version. You'll have to go to the cable company and say, I need an M card. It's a special PC card that you put in the back of the TiVo that turns it into a legitimate Time or Charter set-top box. By the way, every cable company is required by law to offer this. They may not be required to make it easy. They may hide it in the back room. They may pretend they have no idea what you're talking about. But you need an M card. You put that in the TiVo. Now, the Romeo has the capability to put that television signal out over your Wi-Fi. And they have littler devices that you can connect to all the TVs. So that way, you only need one set-top box. You will have to pay that monthly fee to the cable company for that M card. But you don't have to pay monthly fees for all the other TVs.
Yes, I'm looking at the HD Home Run Prime.
Same thing.
It converts the same thing. My question is, and then what I wanted to do is see the TV on like a tablet, and from the
same
tablet,
thing.
Push it to any TV.
Yeah, or you can get boxes that will attach to the TV and do the same thing. Yes.
So which box do you recommend? Because I'm looking at Roku's and Chromecast.
No. You need to get one that's compatible with the Home Run or whatever system you're using. So I use a TiVo Romeo, so I have to get TiVo. There's special little TiVo boxes that connect up to it.
Gotcha. All right. Well, yeah.
Now, the thing about TiVo is you do get a monthly fee, and, of course, you'll have to pay for the cable card. But,
Yeah, the cable cards only run $2 a month versus a cable box.
Yeah, it's a lot cheaper.
$7.
Yeah. So you can do this. Now, there are issues. Remember, you're going to be using now your internal bandwidth, and that may affect the quality. If everybody's watching at the same time, it's not going to work very well, so forth and so on. But you have 7 TVs. It's probably worth looking into this.
Definitely.
You'll be spending a lot of money on cable boxes. Yeah, I really felt like that was a little scam on the part of the cable companies. And I guess that the FCC can't force them to have unscrambled analog channels anymore. I think in some cases they are required, but they've pretty much gone all digital scrambled, and that requires you rent a box from them. So they make more money, and then they can also, I mean, they don't have to make it proprietary. They can not scramble them. They could get the benefit of the extra bandwidth without charging you a certain $7.50 a month or whatever, but hey, they're the cable companies. They're here to make money. Azar in Irvine, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Azar.
Hi, how's it going, Leo?
Very well. Welcome.
Thank you. My question is, recently I just had a baby, so I've been working from home a lot.
Congratulations. That's great.
Thank you.
And it's nice that you could do that. You could be around. I bet your wife appreciates that.
Oh, my wife definitely appreciates it. I bet she does. I'm an IT, I'm a systems administrator, and, I definitely hate the idea of opening my laptop and, doing what I need to do for a quick 10 seconds and then jumping off. So, I've been looking at getting a tablet. I don't want to go with an iPad because I have a Nexus 5 phone, which is great.
Yeah, get a Nexus 7 tablet, which is awesome, and $225.
Right, exactly. And you can find a refurbished one for about $120-$130.
Do not get the refurbished ones because that's probably the first Nexus 7. And yeah, that's a false economy. The first one didn't have the high-res screen.
Right.
There were issues. Get the most recent Nexus 7. It's worth $100 more.
So I'm kind of torn between a Dell Venue Pro because I've been seeing them been going on sale for
a
really good price.
Yeah, the little 8-inchers. Yeah.
Right. So it's, I'm torn between a Dell Venue Pro or a Nexus.
Yeah, I mean, it's what you're torn between is Windows and Android.
Right.
And the one advantage of the Venue is you'll get Office, Microsoft Office.
Mm-hmm.
And if you use Office a lot in your work, Excel or Word or PowerPoint, that would be an advantage. But you already know Android. You're used to the Android ecosystem. If you can do everything you want on your Nexus 5, you just want a bigger screen, then a Nexus 7 is a good choice. Samsung also, people probably like the Samsung larger. They're 10 inches. They have 12 inches. They have some additional features that are nice, like split screen. So I would consider them as well. But I'm a big fan. I have a Nexus 7. I think that is, in many respects, the perfect tablet. It's really, really nice.
And as far as multitasking on the Nexus 7 and, I guess, tech apps, would that be the way to go on the Nexus 7?
Think of it as a big Nexus 5. Whatever you can do on the Nexus 5, you can do.
Gotcha.
It's exactly the same.
Well, thank you very much, Leo.
You're welcome. I appreciate it. I think multitasking is an interesting thing. First of all, humans don't multitask, really. We do the same thing the computer does. We time slice. We do this, then we do that, then we do that. We do this, 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 this in order. Nobody's doing, very few people, really. In fact, there was an online test. I'll see if I can find it. We'll put it in the show notes to see if you could actually multitask. And what the test seems to have found is that a very small percentage, on the order of 10-15% of all humans, have this capability. The rest think they're multitasking. And I've seen a lot of studies that show that people who think they can multitask and do well actually do much more poorly than they think. It's the people who think they can multitask who actually do really poorly on these tests. So a tablet that does one thing at a time and then you context switch back and forth, for most people that's fine. We don't really multitask. Most of us. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte. What is that? Do you know what that is? I like that. American authors. I'm going to have to add them to my list. Nathan Staton, once again, showing that he is a musical genius, even if he isn't a super tasker. Actually, you know, people like Nathan, who are doing a lot of things at once, he's running a control board, he's answering the phone, he's picking music. He might be a super tasker. To do that, you have to be a super tasker. But a lot of us, in fact, the tests show, by the way, I quoted the number wrong. According to a psychologist, only 2% of us actually can multitask. The rest of us think we can, but in fact what happens is we're worse at everything. So if you're on the phone and driving a car, you're worse at both than if you're just driving or just on the phone. Does that make sense? 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. Tom in Azusa, California. Hi, Tom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I have a few questions for you. I haven't been on a cell phone in many, many years, and with all these new phones and apps and changes, let me ask you now, AT&T has a Galaxy S5. They claim it's waterproof. I believe it has a screen size of 5.1.
No, I think it's bigger than that, isn't it? Maybe not.
5.2, maybe.
Yeah.
That one, as well as the Verizon now, has LG G3.
Right.
Which I think is 5.5
right.
on screen size.
That's right.
Okay. I don't know the difference between megabytes, gigabytes, information like that. I know some.
You're exactly the person who shouldn't worry about those specs. The people who buy smartphones these days, some of us are very spec oriented, right?
Well, what's the screen resolution? What's the dots per inch? What's the size of the screen?
We care about all this stuff.
Yeah.
Real people shouldn't and don't. They say, well, how does it feel in my hand? How does it look? Can I make and answer calls? That kind of thing.
That works too, yeah, absolutely.
But so I wouldn't worry that much about specs. They play up the specs. We're in a spec war. For instance, that LG G3 is the first ultra-high-def screen on a phone. It's double the resolution of all the other phones, including the Galaxy S5. But does that make... Well, but wait. Does it make it look better? Probably not, because your eye can't resolve it at either size.
Yeah, and I'm also not 18 years old anymore.
Well, even an 18-year-old, you probably can't tell the difference because the dots per inch, anything beyond 300 pixels per inch, you can't see the dots, so it doesn't matter. If you can't see the dots, then more dots doesn't make it better. So the real issue, let's talk more practically about what do you want to do with the phone, what carrier are you on, things like that.
Okay, no carrier at the moment.
Good, so you're wide open. And you've never had a smartphone ever?
I have, but it's kind of a almost smartphone sort of deal. It was the older ones, I don't want to say. But with, you know, AT&T, I looked at Galaxy S5.
Well, the first thing to look at is which carrier works best where you are.
I believe it's between AT&T and Verizon.
In most areas of the country, they're equal.
Okay, that's true.
T-Mobile is a good choice, too, because it's very affordable. If T-Mobile's good where you are, I would also add T-Mobile to the mix.
I have that one next on my list.
Okay. And you don't pick the phone until you pick the carrier, because not all phones, as you've noted, are available on our carriers.
That is correct.
Yeah. Now, if two carriers are equal, then you can pick the phone first and the carrier second. Now, then you're going to have the choice between Apple, Android, and Microsoft. There's iPhones, there's Android phones from Samsung, HTC, LG, a variety of manufacturers, and then there's Windows phones from Nokia. Those are your big three, and there are others, obviously, like BlackBerry and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Most.
I want mine, honestly, not just phone calls, which obviously I do. I enjoy playing with it for the internet, the apps.
Yeah.
I have
it's really
satellite. So I can put the movies on while I'm at the doctor's office.
For a lot of people, this is their computer.
That's kind of where I'm going. But I have a smart TV, too.
Great.
Which I don't know what that exactly means.
As long as it's smart, I don't care. I am either Android or Apple would be a good choice, frankly. Windows Phone is good for first-time smartphone users because it's simpler. But what happens quickly is the app availability is kind of weak, and so especially anybody who's been using a smartphone, but even somebody who's new to smartphones quickly gets to the point where they go, but wait, it doesn't have XYZ, and that's kind of frustrating. Apple and Android pretty much own the market right now. Samsung owns a lot of market share because they spend billions, not millions, billions in advertising. And I don't think Samsung. Yeah, right. That's the first name that leaps. In fact, for many people, Android equals Samsung, just as it used to equal Droid. Remember, the Motorola Droid owned Android for a while because of advertising. Okay. I don't think necessarily they make the best Android phones. I think there are other Android phones that are better, including the Motorola X, the HTC One, and the LG G3 that you described. All three of those, in many ways, are better because they're purer experiences. Samsung layers a lot of its extra stuff on top because they really want you to live in the Samsung world, just as Apple wants you to live in the Apple world. And I resent that. If you're buying Android, you want to be in a more open environment. Have you really decided on Android, or are you still undecided on that?
No, I'm undecided. I have open options. I'm looking at it, as you said, you know, making, receiving phone calls, using the internet, playing with the apps, as well as with my Dish network. You know, I can throw these recorded programs on my phone, and I really...
Well, that sounds like you want a bigger screen. If you're going to watch videos on a phone, you want a little bit of a bigger screen. You want better sound, too.
Which would be...
The best sound is the HTC One. It has dual speakers left and right on the front. It's the only one like that.
I've heard of that.
That's a natural way to look at it. It's not the biggest phone out there. It's only 5 inches, but it has a beautiful screen. So that's certainly one to look at. We didn't even mention battery life, and there's a great variation in battery life on these phones.
That's right.
Furthermore, many of the phones, the iPhone, the HTC One, are sealed. You can't open them, but the Samsungs are not, which means you can buy an extra battery on the Samsung, and if you run down, pop another battery in. And that's really, really handy. You know, whenever I buy a Samsung phone, I usually get a couple extra batteries for it because then I don't ever have to worry about battery life. I just carry an extra battery in my pocket.
Or plug it in the car when you're in the car.
Well, as long as if you know what your lifestyle is, if you're frequently near a charger at work, in the car, and at home, then battery life is secondary. Battery life becomes important if you travel a lot, if you're on the road for your work and you're not always near a charger. For a lot of people, battery life is not an issue, and only you know that. This is a very personal decision.
Okay.
I think the G3 is really a nice phone, and I would certainly look closely at it. The only negative for me, and it won't be a negative for you, is the buttons are in an odd position there on the back of the phone. But see, you've never used one, so you don't know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I haven't played with the new LG, the G3. It's just now coming out on Verizon. And it's one of those phones that is all about the specs. You know, the screen resolution, for instance. It's all about Ultra HD. It's the highest resolution screen ever offered on a smartphone. Apple started all this, remember, with the so-called Retina displays. Apple said, well, at normal usage distance on the new Retina iPad, you can't see the dots. That's what we call it. It's a marketing term. There's no definition of Retina. It's a marketing term. The theory being, if the resolution of the screen is high enough that you can't see the dots at normal operating distance, then that's good. And, of course, it's true that if you can't see the dots, having more of them is not going to make it better. So LG, you know, most of us use a smartphone at around 10 to 15 inches from our eyes. That means anything above, say, 350 dots per inch, you're just not going to see the difference. Many of the smartphones now are over 400 dots per inch. This 5.5-inch G3 is 2560 by 1440. 2560 by 1440. It's double the resolution horizontally and vertically of a high-def screen on a 5.5-inch screen. It's more dots than you need. So they win the spec war. Congratulations, you win. But it's very possible to, for instance, have a processor that's so fast that it's faster than it needs to be. Or let's say they decided to put 8 gigs of memory in that phone. If 2 is enough, then what does it matter? So you can, in a way, you can overdo it. In a way, you can easily overdo it. So I'll have to see it, and I'll let you know. My concern is more about some more practical issues, like the weird phone buttons on the back. I'm afraid I'm going to hit them wrong or whatever. The size is a little big for a lot of people. 5.5 inches is pretty ginormous. I think, frankly, Apple, which is supposedly doing... And we don't know. These are rumors. A 4.7-inch iPhone for this fall and perhaps a 5.5-inch iPhone. Apple's, I think, got it right with a 4.7. That's kind of, to me, the sweet spot. You want a phone that you can hold in one hand and operate with one thumb. And so any bigger than 4.7, your span, your hand span is probably not wide enough to use with one hand. Notice I haven't been mentioning the latest, greatest phone, the Amazon Fire Phone. The reason is I don't recommend it. It's sad. I have one. I'm looking at it right now. It has some interesting features, yeah. But it is a dead end, in my opinion. Very similar in price and specs to all of the kind of flagship phones from all the manufacturers. It's a 4.7-inch screen. It has a quad-core Snapdragon 600 processor. It's got plenty of memory. It's Android, but this is the problem. It's a Amazon only Android, so there's no Google at all on it, no Google services at all on it. That's a deal breaker right up front. No Google Maps, no Google camera stuff, no Google Plus. That's a deal breaker. And in a way, this would be a great phone if it were an Android phone. Add the features you want to add, like the perspective, the dynamic perspective, the Firefly button that lets you take a picture of anything and identify it and buy it on Amazon. Those are cool features. The Mayday feature, it's the only phone, maybe a good phone for a new user, where you could press a button and a live person will actually come on screen and help you with your phone. It's the only phone that does that. Those are great features. But they're not so great that you're willing to give up being a part of the Android ecosystem for it, in my opinion. So I unfortunately, as interesting as this phone is and it's got some very interesting features, I am not including it on my list of phones that you should consider. Even if you're a massive Android fan, Amazon fan, even if you spend a lot, as I am, I spend a lot of time on Amazon, I think you're giving up too much on this phone. I really do. The user interface is bizarre, frankly. So what are the top phones? Well, I mentioned them. It might be worth waiting until September. We know that the second or third week of September, Apple will have an announcement. We'll at least talk about what's new in its iPhone. It'll probably be available shortly after that. It might be worth waiting if you can, if you've got a decent phone for the next couple of months. See what Apple's got. Samsung Galaxy S5 is certainly at the top of the line. The Note 4 is about to come out if you want a giant phone. I like the HTC One, the new one. That's the one I carry, and I think for many reasons it's a really nice phone. The G3 from LG is certainly one to look at. Have I left anything out? I'm not a big Samsung fan, but I'm going to include the S5. By the way, he said waterproof. Not waterproof. You can't go diving with it. Water resistant. You probably wouldn't want to take it in the shower either. They do have an active version that is more water resistant. More water resistant. Oh, and I forgot. I left out the Moto X, which is getting a little long in the tooth. Came out in August of last year. And I expect we'll see a new Moto X. Some are calling it the X Plus One. Pretty soon now. That's the one I'm kind of holding out for. I'm interested in that one. I loved the Moto X. What I didn't love was the screen. It was a lower resolution 720p screen. And it had a pretty bad camera on it. And the rumors are they'll improve both. So that might be a phone to look at as well. This will be now Lenovo, not Google. Google bought Motorola, but then has sold it since to Lenovo. 8888 Ask Leo. There's the rundown. Everything you ever wanted to know and a whole lot more on smartphones. Best battery life? Probably the Droid Max, the current Max, which is Verizon only. It's essentially a Motorola X with a really big battery. That's probably the best battery life out there. Don't know yet what the G3 will be. It has a very big 31 milliamp hour battery, but it's also got a very high res screen. The more dots on the screen, the more it uses up juice. So I don't know what we're going to see. I've been getting 16 hours on my HTC One, 16 hours of charge. That's pretty good, isn't it? That's kind of what I want. I know I'm going to sleep 8 hours a day. So if I can get from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to bed, 16 hours, that's all I need. Because I know I'm going to charge it every night. 20 hours, I'm still going to charge it every night. 24 hours, I'm still going to charge it every night. Unless you get 2 days, unless you get 32 hours. And I don't know anything that gets anything like that. Not the way I use these things. 8888 Ask Leo. Consumer Reports, apparently, I'm seeing in the chat room, says the Galaxy S5 is best for now. I disagree. I just think it's junked up. It's not a great user interface. Maybe spec-wise. Samson's on the line from Chatsworth, California. Hi, Samson. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Samson. What's up?
Well, I'm trying to make a YouTube channel for gaming. And what seems to be popular right now is face cams.
Yeah, so first of all, how old are you, Samson?
I'm 14.
Good, okay. 13's the cutoff, as you know. The Child Online Protection Act prohibits companies from gathering information about kids under 13 without parental approval. And most companies, including YouTube, don't want to mess with that. So they just say 13 and up only, please. So good. So believe me, there are a lot of kids under 13 on YouTube and Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
And everywhere else, so you can't help that. But in general, I would remind people it's not you're not supposed to because of privacy issues. Now, what game do you play?
I was thinking of doing Minecraft or...
That's a pretty crowded field, isn't it? There are a lot of Minecraft videos. Actually, what you're talking about, there are a lot of, aren't they? This is number one on YouTube is these play-along videos, so much so that YouTube just bought Twitch, which is an online live gaming network, for $1 billion. That just happened. We'll talk a little bit about making your own YouTube channel when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. First song on MTV, right? And now, reality killed the music video. So, do they even... I don't think they play music videos on MTV anymore. They don't, do they?
I feel like they haven't in a long time.
No, it's, you know why?
Stupid reality
You can
shows.
Watch any video you want on YouTube. Yay. The kids today... In fact, I've been watching. I watch with interest people under 20. My daughter... Still watch. She's 22. she'll watch, she doesn't watch live TV, but she'll watch Netflix and TV shows on Netflix, stuff like that. My son, he's 19, YouTube only. And Michael, who's 11, he had four kids over the other night, sleepover time and stuff. TV wasn't on once. Not
wow.
once. Not once. They're playing games, they're watching YouTube. He watches a lot of YouTube, and what he watches a lot of is gameplay video like Samson wants to do. It is easily the hottest category. The number one YouTuber is a Swedish guy named PewDiePie. He sits there and plays video games, has a little picture of himself in the lower left-hand corner, and swears a lot. He's probably making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year on YouTube ads. So, Samson, I do have to ask you a question. Why do you want to do this? You want to make a channel, right?
Yes, I do.
Why?
It looks fun, and
is it because you love Minecraft? Is it because you love Minecraft? It sounded like you're picking Minecraft because it's popular, not because it's your personal favorite.
No, it's my personal favorite.
Definitely. Oh, it is. Okay. Why tell me you're a young person? You presumably watch a lot of these YouTube videos, right?
Yeah.
What are the ones you like? Why do you like them?
I guess I like stuff that people like Captain Sparkles do. Like, it's funny and it's interesting to see how they figure things out on the games that they play.
Yeah. So you do it, and I know this is why Michael watches, because he learns tricks and techniques. So it's an educational thing for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the saying, when in doubt, YouTube.
When in doubt, YouTube. Yep. And then I think there is also a comedy component, isn't there? Because I hear him laughing a lot. You like the funny ones, right?
Yeah.
According to Social Blade, nobody really knows how much people make on this stuff, but Social Blade is a site that tries to figure it out. According to Social Blade, PewDiePie, who is the number one Social Blade ranker, he's only number five in subscribers, makes between $2.4 million and $19 million a year. What?
Wow.
What? But I got to tell you, it's only the top 10 that make anywhere near that kind of money. And it's also very competitive. And there's no easy form of discovery, is there? How did you find Captain Sparkles? Your friends told you about him.
Well, I was like looking up videos on how to do something.
Oh, okay.
Was the first video that popped up.
That's one thing Google has down is search, right? So search or your friends, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was calling to know if you know of any good places to get cheap but really good green screen equipment.
So your idea is, most of the time these guys use software that have a little picture of them in the thumbnail and they record the computer screen, which has the game. You want to do it kind of the other way around, which is you have a camera that records you sitting against a green screen and the game's going on behind you. Is that right?
Exactly.
Yeah. That actually will look better because you will appear as part of the game instead of just in a window on the game.
Yeah. The problem is that I have a really messy background.
Yeah. So, most kids do. So here's the thing. You can get a green sheet.
Mm-hmm.
The key on green screening is that you have a consistent color behind you. It doesn't matter what color it is, incidentally. Mm-hmm. But ideally, not a color that would ever be in anything you would wear or that's in your face. You wouldn't want to have it be the same color as your eyes, because then when you key it out, that is, you drop it out, your eyes will also drop out. So you want to make sure. That's why they typically use green. They used to use blue, but people have blue eyes. So they started using green and a kind of fluorescent green, because it doesn't appear in nature very much or in clothing people wear very much. So you'll have to be careful to make sure you don't match it in any way. But literally, a sheet, paint the wall, anything that gives you a consistent color. And then lighting is also very important. You don't want shadows, because a shadow will change the color, right? So you have to light the screen separately from how you light yourself. And this is the most tricky part of doing a good green screen, is you have two sets of lights, one for you, one for the screen. That's the most expensive part. Then any camera and software is fairly straightforward. In fact, you can do it on a Mac. It's built into a a photo booth.
Yeah, I have OBS.
Yeah, so that's not
OBS
a big deal.
OBS has Chroma Key.
Yeah, so anything that's got built-in Chroma Key will do it. Try a sheet, but you want to stretch it tight. You don't want wrinkles. You don't want shadows. And then lights, you don't have to buy fancy studio lights. You can go to the hardware store. You know those lights that they sell for your dad in the garage? It's got a metal reflector with a bulb in it? That's fine. Yeah. You might want to stretch some cloth over it. That'll soften it. It's called a diffuser. Make sure the cloth's not touching the light bulb or even very close to the light bulb. You don't want to have a fire. But once you have a diffuser over it, it softens the light. All our studio lights, for instance, have diffusers. And that way it makes it, instead of a spot on your nose, it's your whole face. It, you know what? Playing with this is a great skill that will be of value to you well beyond making YouTube gaming videos.
Yeah. So, do you know where I could like buy stands? Because it's not really a wall behind me; it's more of like half of a bookcase.
Right. And of course, any place that supplies studio equipment will have. Mm-hmm. They call them C clamps. And stands, or you can just make something. You could even do it with coat hangers. You just want to make something pretty stable. And what you want to do is stretch the sheet. So get a colored sheet, stretch it with, you know, clothes pins, whatever. Hang it from the ceiling. It doesn't have to be a stand. You can jerry-rig this whole thing. And I think this is where you and your ingenuity and your limited budget are going to come in. Because I think you can totally do this beautifully. And let me see if I can find for you a green screen tutorial, because that's what you'd really like. There are kits. In fact, somebody has put a link in our show notes to a kit on Amazon.com that will do the whole thing for you. 6x9 Chroma Key backdrop. They have stands on Amazon as well. Everything you'd need. This is a Chroma Key green muslin backdrop seamed around the edges. Comes with a convenient pole pocket. Then you just have to get a pole to mount it. But you know what? This is $18.99. That's not much. A sheet wouldn't be more than that. They even offer a kit that includes the, for $33, the adjustable backdrop support. This is not expensive. And then the clips, you're talking all in, $60 for spring clamps, adjustable. I'll tell you, this is good. I'll put a link to this in the show notes. This is all at Amazon. You could have it on Tuesday. You'd be making your videos on Wednesday. You'd be a millionaire by next weekend. Yeah, when I was his age, what was I doing? I had a reel-to-reel recorder, and I was making fake commercials. So you got, when you're about that age, these are formative years. Parents should pay attention to what their kids are up to at those ages, because that could be you could end up doing that for the rest of your life. Look at me. Hey, I want to thank you so much for being here. Everything we talk about, including the link to that Amazon deal for you, Samson, on our website, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. You can also find links there to the chat room. The phone number, everything you need to know, plus audio and video from all of our shows. We make them available for free. You don't have to subscribe or pay a membership fee. It's all up there. Thanks to our great sponsors. They make it possible. TechGuyLabs.com. Thanks, Heather Hummond, for your great work as the Phone Ranger. To Nathan Staten, our musical director, thanks to you for joining us. Have a great Geek Week. I'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.